Welcome to Beast by Beast, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Okay, let's jump right in. We often talk about DNA replication as this really elegant chemical process.
Yeah, enzymes reading bases, making perfect copies.
Exactly. But we forget the absolutely massive, almost industrial scale mechanical challenge that's going on.
It's a physical problem, not just a chemical one. I mean, think about the structure. DNA is a double helix, a twisted ladder.
Right.
To copy it, the replication machinery, the replisome, it has to physically pull those two strands apart. And because of that twist, it has to rotate one full turn for every, what, 10.5 base pairs it copies?
One turn for every 10 steps. And your genome has 3 billion base pairs.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, it's an almost impossible amount of twisting. The math alone is dizzying.
It truly is. So the really big question has always been, how does the cell physically unwind this enormous thread without the DNA ahead of it just, you know, tangling up into a super tight, unusable knot?
Because that's what happens, right? If you take a twisted rope and pull the strands apart, the rest of the rope coils up. That tension is what we call torsion.
And when that torsion, that mechanical stress, gets too high, the whole process just grinds to a halt.
The very engine of life just stops.
And that stalling is where all the danger is. It's where genomic instability creeps in. So understanding how the fork handles that stress, and maybe more importantly, how it restarts, that's been a central mystery.
Which is where this new work really changes the game.
Before we get into the physics of it all, we should really give credit where it's due.
Of course.
So today, we're celebrating the work of Xiaoming Jie and a whole team of colleagues. They represent institutions like the Howard Hughes Medical Institute at Cornell, Rutgers, and Johns Hopkins.
And they've really pushed our understanding of these mechanical dynamics.
They've given us the tools to finally see it, to quantify this physical dilemma.
And this dilemma, it's not new, right? I mean, since Watson and Crick, everyone knew this was a problem.
Oh, absolutely. The topological challenge was clear from day one. As the replisome unwinds the helix, it has to force extra twists into the DNA ahead of it. We call that positive supercoiling, or plus torsion.
So it's like tightening a spring in front of the machine.
Exactly. And the cell does have a solution. It has these enzymes called topoisomerases.
The pressure release valves.
That's a perfect way to put it. They're essential. They relieve the pressure by cutting the DNA, letting it unwind, and then sticking it back together.
So if we have these specialized enzymes, why do forks still stall? I mean, if they're doing their job, the replisome should just cruise along, shouldn't it?
Well, the problem is they can't always keep up,
yeah.
Especially in cells that are replicating really fast. The torsional load gets critical during high-speed copying, and this is a big one, when the replisome runs into another motor, like an RNA polymerase.
Yeah.
A head-on conflict.
Traffic jam on the genome.
Exactly. And the really scary thing about torsion is that it's not a local problem.
Right, it's not like one damaged base.
No, the stress transmits over huge distances, thousands of base pairs ahead of the fork, so it can cause these massive system-wide stalls.
Which makes stalling inevitable, I guess. But what happens at the fork? How do the individual parts, the helicase and the polymerase, actually deal with that force? That's been the black box.
It has. And the breakthrough here was, well, it was a feat of engineering, really. They had to invent a way to literally grab a single DNA molecule and twist it.
So this is where we get to their core methodology. Angular optical trap, or AOT. It sounds very futuristic.
It is. The AOT is the centerpiece. So imagine you anchor a single strand of DNA.
Just one.
Just one. At one end, you attach a tiny nano-fabricated quartz cylinder. It's basically a rotational handle.
A tiny wrench for DNA. Wow.
And by controlling the light they shine on that cylinder, they can turn it and apply a really, really precise amount of torque, a precise twisting force.
So they're not just watching, they're actively dialing up the pressure to see exactly when the machine breaks.
Precisely. They could run it in two modes. First, they let the cylinder spin freely, which is like a perfect world with no torsion.
Where the topoisomerases are working perfectly.
Right. But then, in the second mode, they restricted the rotation.
Yeah.
And that forced the replisome to work against more and more torsion until, pop, the fork stalls.
And they used the T7 replisome, which is a simpler viral system, just to keep things clean and focused on the core mechanics.
Mm-hmm. They also used a second technique, magnetic tweezers, to back up their findings, especially in the restart process. It's a bit less direct, but it's great for seeing how the DNA physically stretches and buckles under stress.
Okay, let's get to the data.
Yeah.
Because the numbers they found for the raw power of this thing are genuinely shocking.
They really are. It turns out the complete T7 Replisim is an absolute behemoth.
How powerful.
It generates a stall torque of about 22 piconewton nanometers. 22.
Okay, 22 PNNM. Yeah. For those of us who don't think of those units, what can we compare that to? What was the champion before this?
The reigning champ was E. coli RNA polymerase, the transcription machine.
And that's known for being strong.
Very. But it stalls out at around 11 PNNM.
So, the Replisim is twice as powerful.
Twice as powerful. It's the most powerful DNA rotary motor that's ever been studied.
That's not a small difference. That's a huge leap. But what's weird is, the study showed that the individual parts are weak, right? The helicase alone and the polymerase alone can't do much.
And that is one of the coolest insights, that massive 22 PNNM number. It only happens when they are working together. It's all about the synergy.
So why? How does putting them together double the power?
The thinking is that it's structural. When they're coupled, each one is tracking a different strand of the DNA. This gives them a much larger leverage arm to crank against the DNA's central axis.
Oh, I see. So instead of two small motors, you get one giant unified corkscrew.
That's a great analogy. It gives the whole complex this enormous rotational power.
But that connection has to be solid.
It's critical. And they tested that. They looked at the specific link between the polymerase and a part of the helicase called the C-terminal domain, the CTD.
And when they broke that link, the delta C's mutant.
The whole system just became incredibly unstable. Under high stress, the normal Replisim would back up a bit, maybe 80 base pairs in a minute.
Which we'll get to. But the mutant.
The mutant reversed a staggering 240 base pairs in the same amount of time. A threefold increase in the fork just collapsing backward.
So when we say the fork regresses, what's physically happening? Is the polymerase just going in reverse?
Not really. It's more of a mechanical collapse. The torsion gets so high that the two new strands just peel off the template. And they stick to each other, forming this thing people call a chicken foot structure. It releases the stress, but it also leaves the Replisim totally stuck and inactive.
Which makes the timing of those topoisomerases even more critical.
Yeah.
The longer the stress is on, the worse it gets.
And they tested that directly. A short stall, maybe 30 seconds, and the fork restarts just fine. But if they held that stress for 90 or 120 seconds, the restart success rate dropped way down.
The clock is ticking.
The moment that stress spikes, yeah.
So if you have a delay in relief, the damage might be permanent. But this brings us to what I thought was the most surprising finding.
Yeah.
How do you fix a stalled, inactivated fork?
The answer appears to be, just add more parts.
Or more parts.
Yeah. After a long stall, around 4 minutes, they found that if they just flooded the system with extra DNA polymerase, the restart rate went through the roof.
What was the jump?
It went from about 40% success up to 85%.
Wow. From less than half to almost guaranteed.
Wow. From less than half to almost guaranteed? But why? Why does having extra polymerase floating around help?
Well, it gives huge support to this idea of DNA exchange.
All right.
The theory is that during that long stall, the original polymerase on the fork actually gets damaged or inactivated. It's broken.
So the extra polymerase comes in, and the helicase recruits a fresh, new one to swap out the old, broken one. It's like a pit stop. New part comes in, and the engine can restart.
That is fascinating. So it suggests that having a reserve pool of these factors is just as important as the enzymes that relieve stress.
Exactly. And they tied it all together nicely by adding gyrase, a topoisomerase, to the system. And of course,
everything ran smoothly.
Perfectly. Steady, continuous replication. But if they delayed adding the gyrase, restart efficiency fell off a cliff. The conclusion is just crystal clear. Mechanical stress has to be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with immediately.
So let's pull all this together. What's the big biological picture here? That 22 PNMM torque number. That has to have huge implications for how the cell manages conflicts, doesn't it?
It really does. It gives us a new way to think about why replication usually wins in a head-on collision with transcription.
Right. The Replisim usually pushes the RNA polymerase out of the way.
Yeah.
We used to think of it as a physical collision.
Yeah.
Bulldozer.
But maybe it's not a bulldozer. Maybe it's a torsional tug of war. The Replisim generates twice the torque of the RNAP, so it can just build up so much positive torsion between the two machines.
That it stalls the weaker RNAP first.
Long before they even physically touch, doesn't need to bump it out of the way. It just twists the road ahead into a knot that the RNAP can't get through.
That is so much more elegant. Okay, and what about the other side of it? That fork regression, the 80 base pairs of backup we see in a normal Replisim, is that a failure or is it a feature?
The data really suggests it's a feature, a protective one.
The safety valve.
It's a safety valve, exactly. That small amount of regression bleeds off some of the torsional stress. It prevents that catastrophic collapse we saw in the mutant, and it stabilizes the fork just long enough for the topoisom races to finally arrive and fix the problem. The cell is buying itself time.
And that evidence for DNA peak exchange, that huge jump in restart success, that seems incredibly important.
Absolutely. I mean, this is probably the strongest evidence we've ever had that the availability of fresh polymerase is a critical factor for keeping the genome stable under stress. These proteins aren't just static parts of a machine, they're a dynamic repair crew.
So where do we go from here? Now that this whole framework exists, these assays for applying and measuring torsion, we can move beyond simple viral systems.
That's the next logical step. Applying these exact same mechanical tests to the much, much more complex eukaryotic replisomes, you know, the CMG complex in our own cells.
Which has a different structure, but the same fundamental problem.
The physics doesn't change. It still has to manage torsion. These methods will let us map out the mechanical weak points and the restart strategies in human DNA replication with a resolution we've never had before.
Okay, let's try to boil this down.
Yeah.
The core insight you should take away from this deep dive is this. Torsion isn't just some passive obstacle. It's an active, powerful regulator of DNA replication.
Right. And the incredible synergy between the helicase and the polymerase creates this 22 PNNA supermotor that's essential for fork power and stability. So keeping your genome intact requires two things.
One, timely relief of that mechanical stress by topoisom races.
And two, having a ready supply of extra DNA polymerase to swap in and restart the engine when it inevitably stalls.
So what does this all mean for us? Well, if mechanical stress is this precise of a regulator, think about this. What if small variations in topoisomerase activity between different people, or even different cell types, dramatically affect disease progression? Especially when you consider that many chemotherapy drugs work by targeting these exact enzymes. It really reframes things like chemotherapy resistance as, potentially, a problem of mechanical failure. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Spiral roads unwinding, tension tightly wound. Machines at the junction where life's code is found. Atoms in rotation, silent unseen fights. A motor built for movement, pressing through the night. When the spiral and pull in battle, two hands in a cord. Polymers and helicas separate, they're ignored. But locked as one, they